It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Week 15 in the National Football League. And for those of you that are in your fantasy playoffs, you've come to the right place. Those of you that are just looking for some DFS tips, you've come to the right place. We are presented by FanVice.com, your one-stop shop for all your daily fantasy sports needs. FanVice has great tools, articles, and even live streaming video casts. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at FanVice DFS and check out the site FanVice.com. A lot to get to today, Evan. We only have one part today. We've been breaking it up for a while. Part one, part two for the Fantasy Feast today. It's all in one, dudes. We're going long. Rather than breaking it up into two, we are going long, making sure you have the breakdown of really just the things you need to know from a fantasy perspective for each and every game, week 15 in the NFL, trying to give you guys the best chance to have success. And frankly, we give you so much knowledge and drop so much knowledge that if you want, you can go over to betdsi.com and use the code Tucker15 and get a free $15 to bet on whatever you want. They got all kinds of stuff over there. NBA, college hoops, college football, bowl game, NHL, and of course, the mighty NFL. Not to be confused with the mighty Ross Tucker Football Podcast, but just go over there. Use Tucker15 at BetDSI. Quite literally, don't know why you would not do that. It's free money. Everybody likes free money. BetDSI.com using code Tucker15. All right, Evan, let's start with the Thursday night matchup. It's the Rams and the Seahawks. Given the fact that Jeff Fisher's gone, do you have any hopes for anybody on the Rams from a fantasy football perspective tomorrow night?
Do you think that they're going to rally around John Fossil and rise up and pull off this upset victory?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so... No, I mean, it would be really hard for me to imagine wanting to start any Rams offensive players in this. The Rams have a team total under 12 points. I've never seen a team total that low. Kenny Britt did have some success against them, 6 for 94 when these teams met earlier in the year, and has been pretty consistent regardless of quarterback play. But, I don't want to test my luck twice with Kenny Britt. I don't want any Rams. I want to, you know, the Seahawks defense is an incredible play this week. There are a couple of great defensive plays this week. One of them is the Vikings against the Colts. Another one, the Texans against the Jaguars. But the Seahawks at home against the Rams is absolutely the best fantasy defense play of the week. Jared Goff taking a ton of sacks. You know, the Falcons defense scored like 30 fantasy points last week, and now they're on the road on a short week after just firing their head coach. The Seahawks defense is in an incredible spot.
Conversely, Seahawks offense had their struggles in Green Bay. What do you specifically see from them in the matchup against the Rams that's noteworthy?
Yeah, the Seahawks home road splits have been incredible this year. You know, the bottom fell out for them in that road game at Tampa Bay a couple of weeks ago, and again at Green Bay. And in road games this year, they have been averaging about 12 points a game. At home, they're averaging almost 28.5 points a game. So, to me, against this broken Rams team, I think that this is a pretty easy bounce-back spot for Russ. The Rams have given up 11 passing touchdowns over their last four games. That's almost three per game. And, you know, I think that Russ has success. I think Thomas Rawls should eat as well. The Rams' run defense hasn't been as great down the stretch of the season. And whenever a Seahawks running back is at home and is a big favorite, these guys tend to really smash it. You know, whether it has been Marshawn Lynch historically or Kristen Michael or Thomas Rawls when he's gotten opportunities in these kind of situations. I mean, we saw in the Seahawks last game, Thomas Rawls went off in what appeared to be a really difficult matchup in a home game where the Panthers were significant favorites against Carolina. You know, this is a better matchup than that. You know, I would expect a big day for Rawls. The matchups in the passing game are not great on paper for Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. But, I mean, I think that the Seahawks offense really shows up in a big way here. And, you know, I would want to start both of those guys. The Tyler Lockett saw six targets again last week. Didn't have, you know, a big fantasy week, but his usage is up. You know, like he's at least getting pretty consistent targets at this point. You just have to know going in that he can give you very little, and that to give you something decent, he needs to hit a big play.
All right. Well, we can move on then. Not too terribly exciting Thursday night game, but there's a lot of good games on Sunday. We'll start with the Dolphins and the Jets. Curious to get your thoughts on what it means for the Dolphins with Matt Moore in there instead of Tannehill.
Yeah, this is actually the Saturday night game. Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, football. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Saturday night, yep.
Yeah. So if we meet up, you know, we get to watch Matt Moore against Bryce Petty football.
I mean, there's nothing better.
No, I mean, I've always liked Matt Moore as a backup quarterback. He has had stints as a starter, and he's looked at worst competent. I mean, yeah, he's been more than competent in his past backup starts. He's thrown 16 pass attempts over the last 4 years in regular season play. So I don't know. You know, he's a guy that he was once drafted as a baseball player as like a shortstop slash third baseman. He's got plenty of arm. He's a pretty good athlete all around. So I don't know that it's necessarily a downgrade to all, you know, to the Dolphins pass catchers. The one guy that I would be a little bit concerned about probably would be Jarvis Landry, because his fantasy value has also always been tied to getting like 11 targets in a game from Ryan Tannehill, you know, because they have like an on-field connection. And you know, he needs a lot of volume because he doesn't average a lot of yards per catch. He doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. So I don't know if Matt Moore is going to have this same on-field connection with Jarvis Landry. We've seen Jarvis Landry go through like 4 or 5 week spurts here this season where he has not gotten a lot of targets and he was just dead in fantasy. So I don't know, but the Dolphins are certainly facing a depleted Jets secondary. Marcus Gilchrist, their free safety, tore his patellar tendon on a special teams play last week. That's so unfortunate. And then their slot corner Buster Skrien suffered his second concussion of the year. I don't think that we're going to see him play on a short week. So the matchups are all good, you know, for Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, and Jarvis Landry. It's just, you know, we haven't seen them perform in a game with Matt Moore. Matt Moore did come on for five pass attempts last week. Two of them were intended for Stills. One was a big play. I don't know if that's anything to hang your hat on, but perhaps notable. Jay Ajayi had 130 total yards and a touchdown when the Dolphins hosted the Jets. I think it was in week 9, and Carlos Hyde ran all over them last week. So I don't know, you know, with this Jets team having circled the drain already, I don't know that I'm going to definitely view the Jets as like, ooh, you know, this is a scary matchup for Jay Ajayi. He's already ripped it up once, and we saw what happened last week with Carlos Hyde.
What about for the Jets? Talk to me about anything we need to know regarding Bryce Petty, but I guess in particular, Matt Forte and Bilal Powell.
I don't think that Matt Forte is going to play. We'll see, but that would be surprising. I would expect Bilal Powell to get a ton of work. The Jets' other back on their 53 is an undrafted rookie named Brandon Wilds, who I think they gave like 2 carries last week. Bilal Powell played almost 90% of the snaps. Bilal Powell is a good back, and he's also going to be game script proof, because if the Dolphins get a lead, you know, let's say they jump out 17-0 and the Jets feel like they have to pass the rest of the game, Bilal Powell's going to stay on the field in that situation. He's been the passing game, you know, hurry up back, even with Matt Forte in there. So he is looking at a ton of work against the Dolphins, who are 22nd in run defense DVOA, and have gotten smashed for big running game, big running back games consecutively for several weeks. And also worth mentioning, Robbie Anderson, this is Bryce Petty's boy. In the preseason, Bryce Petty was hooking up for touchdowns with Robbie Anderson. And since Bryce Petty took over, Bryce Petty has attempted 94 passes this year. Robbie Anderson has been targeted on 29 of them. That's 31%. The NFL leader in target percentage is Mike Evans at 31%. So Robbie Anderson is seeing like elite wide receiver one usage right now, and that puts him in play in fantasy. With Brandon Marshall, the only thing you really have to hang your hat on is the narrative of him facing his former team, which he has gotten up for, and apparently he hates Byron Maxwell. So, I don't know if Bryce Petty even wants to throw to him. It seems like Bryce Petty wants to throw to Robbie Anderson and take shot plays to Robbie Anderson. But there is like a narrative here working in Brandon Marshall's favor. But Brandon Marshall has been held to 70 yards or fewer in like 8 straight games, and he's been horrible with Bryce Petty at quarterback.
Eagles against the Ravens in Baltimore. I don't expect the Eagles to be able to run the ball that well with their O-line beat up against that Ravens front, but we can talk a little bit about the receivers for Carson Wentz and the tight ends in this matchup against the Ravens. Why don't you start with what you think is noteworthy about the Eagles?
Well, I think that it's noteworthy just that they're letting Carson Wentz drop back to pass so often, and that is good news for the volume of guys like Zach Ertz. And we saw your boy Trey Burton. He has started to make some plays pretty consistently now. I don't think I'm using him in fantasy yet or anything like that, but we know that he's a good player. He stepped up in a big way when Zach Ertz was out earlier this year, and he's still making plays even with Zach Ertz back. And then Jordan Matthews, he should get fed in the middle of the field. I think that's about it for the Eagles. Wendell Smallwood got placed on IR, so I would expect a committee backfield the rest of the way. Sproles got hurt too last week, I think. I can't remember what happened, though.
Yeah, no, he's in concussion protocol. He got drilled in the head on a punt return. He got absolutely smoked.
That's right.
In concussion protocol right now.
That's right. So it could be just Ryan Matthews and Kenyon Barner, I guess. I don't know. We're going to have to see how that thing shakes out toward the end of the week.
On the other side, Baltimore.
Yeah, Joe Flacco has been really productive lately. The pass catcher core has been difficult because they're using so many guys. I mean, they're using like second and third tight ends. You know, Darren Waller is out here making plays. They use a bunch of different receivers. And you know, they throw to both of their backs in the passing game. So, like, trying to project a receiver for a big game on Baltimore has become really difficult. With that said, man, you know, you don't get better wide receiver matchups than against the Eagles. And so Steve Smith and Mike Wallace are both in very intriguing spots. You know, we have to understand that this passing game is now widely distributed. There's not somebody on a weekly basis getting 11 targets a game. You know, these guys have to capitalize on their lowered opportunities, but they have sweet matchups in a home game against maybe the worst cornerback unit in the league. So I think the Flacco is pretty interesting again this week. And, you know, the backfield has become a situation where the Ravens are just going to use both of those guys. And, you know, they both have use in their offense, and they are going to continue to share time. And that is, you know, kind of frustrating for fantasy, but that may be what's best for the Ravens.
Cleveland at Buffalo, second consecutive week you're going with RG3 as a quarterback streamer, right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I did not. I was not on him at all.
I know. I'm joking, okay. Dude.
All right.
Anything noteworthy? Crow had a good game. Anything noteworthy for the Browns against the Bills?
Yeah, Hugh Jackson was talking about how he thinks that having Robert Griffin III in there helps their running game. And so, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's something that we can cling to a little bit. They've run the ball pretty well in both of RG3 starts with Crowell. If Kyle Williams is out again for the Bills, and I've gone back and looked at historical stats with and without Kyle Williams in the lineup for the Bills run defense, and it's a very, very, very big difference. And we saw Le'Veon just go wild against them last week. Like, it was easy at the Ralph, too. So I think that, you know, there are some reasons to be optimistic about Isaiah Crowell if Kyle Williams is out and with RG3 at quarterback. I don't know how you could have any confidence in any of the Browns' pass catchers. You need a bomb, maybe two bombs. I mean, say you catch one bomb, and, you know, it's only 42 yards, and you don't catch any passes other than that. I mean, you probably need two bombs, you know. It's a really, really dysfunctional passing game in Cleveland, and, you know, nobody's going to be fed consistently in this type of a situation.
What do we need to know about Buffalo?
LeSean McCoy should go nuts. Tyrod Taylor was definitely not the problem last week, even though Rex has continued to be like non-committal about Tyrod Taylor's starting job. I think that Tyrod Taylor. I mean, we're to the point in the season where we need to consider, like, motivation. And Tyrod Taylor has a lot to play for down the stretch of what could amount to a contract year for him. I think ultimately they're going to have a hard time letting him go, even though his price tag is so large. But he's got a lot left to play for. Sammy Watkins was a near full-time player last week. So it's great matchups for Tyrod and Sammy Watkins and LeSean McCoy. I mean, the Bills' offense is in a great situation here, and it's just kind of like up to them to capitalize.
I will be in Chicago, as you know. It is the Packers and the Bears. Kind of an interesting matchup from a fantasy perspective. Let's start with the Packers, who are getting it going a little bit offensively and what we need to know specifically about them and their matchup against the Bears.
Yeah, it is 11 degrees right now, and it is supposed to be -1 on Sunday. So just something to note. You know, it's usually the wind is the biggest deal, but when we get down into the negatives, I think that that's probably a little bit of a concern. I don't know. Can you tell us about that at all, Ross? I mean, you played in Buffalo.
I did, you know, and I know that I mean, nobody likes playing in that weather. And I just don't remember, though, the level of impact it has. My perception is that they were almost always low-scoring games. I don't know why, you know, how that manifests itself like that. You know, quarterbacks, running backs, receivers trying to keep their hands warm. It just makes it – everything is harder. Everything's a little harder to – throw the ball, a little harder to catch the ball. I know for me it's a little harder as a center to snap it, shotgun snap it. You just – it's like it feels like you don't have as much blood in your hands. I don't know how else to describe it. So I would expect the colder it is in general – now there can be high-scoring games, but in general, the colder it is, that should have some negative impact on the scoring. It's just a matter of how much.
Gotcha. So I like this matchup a lot, actually, for Matt Barkley, who's going to be getting back Alshon Jeffrey and perhaps Marcus Wilson. And my guess is that if Alshon comes back and Marcus Wilson comes back, those guys would probably play on the outside. Cameron Meredith has been playing a lot of slot receiver lately. And I think that that would be the Bears' three-receiver set. I really can't pretend to know which guy could have a big game, but the Packers give up a lot of big games to opposing wide receivers, you know, with the exception, of course, of last week against Seattle, which is, you know, an offense just that just never shows up on the road. But the Bears here are at home, and I think that that would be their three-receiver set. I just really can't pretend to know which guy is going to have a big game. I suppose it could be Alshon. I think it could just as easily be Cameron Meredith. Cameron Meredith had a big game last week. I think he's a legit good player. And Marcus Wilson had a big game with Matt Barkley already once this year against the 49ers. So, I'm sorry, against the Titans. So I really just don't know which of those guys is going to have a good game. Jordan Howard is the centerpiece of the Bears' offense, and the Packers' run defense has gone downhill since a hot start to the year. But he's going to get work, and he has produced in difficult matchups. The Lions have been playing really good run defense last week until Jordan Howard hit them for like 110 total yards on 15 touches, was just ripping off big runs against the Lions last week. You know, very impressive rookie Jordan Howard.
Pittsburgh is in Cincinnati. Le'Veon had a game for the ages. Pretty much, if you had Le'Veon on your team, you won. He was amazing. Now they're going to Cincy, though. Bengals playing pretty decent the last few weeks. What do you think for the Steelers offensively in this one?
I forgot to mention the backfield situation for the Packers. We need to discuss that because Ty Montgomery suddenly got a lot more interesting after last week. He played 51% of the snaps, 12 touches, had some great runs into the teeth of the Seahawks defense. I mean, he's, you know, like a poor man's David Johnson. He is going to be a factor in the passing game. James Starks has been phased out now. And it's just Ty Montgomery and Christian Michael, really, that are getting snaps. And Christian Michael, every time he comes in, you know, it telegraphs that it's going to be a run play because he doesn't get any passing game snaps. And Ty Montgomery actually had his original breakout game in the Thursday night football game against the Bears, went for, like, I don't know, well over 100 total yards. So he is back in play, especially in PPR leagues. Yeah, I mean, you know, these Bengals-Steelers games, some of them have been high scoring. Some of them have resulted in, like, on-field brawls. Le'Veon Bell, in each of his last two games against the Bengals, has suffered a year-ending knee injury. You know, Vontaze Burfict always gets ejected. This is like one of the biggest rivalries in the NFL, and the Bengals are certainly going to be up for this, even though their season has been lost. We know about Ben Roethlisberger on the road. It happened to him again last week, and that's a factor that we're always going to have to consider when evaluating Ben Roethlisberger on the road. Since the beginning of the 2014 season, Ben Roethlisberger has a 22-22 touchdown to interception ratio in road games. Just something that we have to make the best decisions that we can. The Bengals have historically really slowed down in Antonio Brown, have used a lot of double teams against him. He has not had the monster weeks against Cincinnati historically, but the Steelers now have Ladarius Green, who the Bengals need to be concerned about. And Ladarius Green did not have a big game last week, but he was still very involved. It was a run first game. I mean, the Steelers actually came out and they were throwing the ball. I mean, they hit a big shot to Antonio Brown down the field, and then Ben throws a pick, and they're kind of like, you know, they settle in and they become a running team, which they had a lot of success with. But I mean, I'm not ready to like call their passing game dead by any means. And the Bengals have gotten smashed by tight ends all season long. So Ladarius Green, this is a better matchup than last week, better situation. He's got big upside. He's got a little Jared Cook in him, but he's got big, big upside. And then Antonio Brown, I think that the emergence of Ladarius as a legit factor and the threat of the Steelers just gashing you all game long with their rushing attack, I mean, I think that those things ultimately benefit Antonio Brown, and he's going to pop up for a big game here before the season ends for sure, and it could just as easily be against Cincinnati.
Bengals, other side, Jeremy Hill, Eifert had big days against the Browns.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Eifert has been Dalton's go-to guy in scoring position since A.J. Green went down. A.J. Green is supposed to practice today, though. We are recording this on Wednesday, and A.J. Green is supposed to practice. So we're going to have to see, you know, that. I mean, that affects other guys if he plays. I think that Jeremy Hill should remain locked in as a guy that we can trust for volume, because he's gotten it every single game, even in games since Gio went down, even in games where the Bengals have fallen behind. I mean, Rex Burkhead has played a little bit more in those situations, but Jeremy Hill has stayed involved, and he's getting passing game targets. And the Steelers have allowed the third most receiving yards to opposing running backs. The Steelers have played pretty good run defense, but Jeremy Hill as a running back at home in what's probably likely to be a fairly close game where the game shouldn't get out of hand. He's tough to get away from when he's got a shot at like 25 touches and his goal line role is really, really secure. That's where I am on the Bengals offense.
Jacksonville against Houston, not exactly a fantasy guy's delight in that one. I don't know. What's noteworthy about this game to you at all? Maybe the running back situation for the Texans?
Yeah, I mean, that Lamar Miller, he had another in-game injury last week, missed like two possessions, came back in, and wound up with a big game. So, that was nice. And now he's at home facing the Jaguars, who, I mean, they've been pretty good against the run, but, you know, I don't know if they're like a – I wouldn't view them as like necessarily a shutdown unit. And Lamar Miller, when he has been healthy, the Texans have really never wavered about him. Whenever he has been healthy, he has been the workhorse. And so that is always comforting to know. The receiver situation is going to continue to be a disaster for the Texans, and even CJ Fedorowicz, who had shown some consistency, has fallen into that. And then for the Jaguars, Marquise Lee has been their best wide receiver this year. Although Allen Robinson did have a big game against the Texans when these teams played, I think it was like in week 10, he had, I want to say like 9 for 107 and a touchdown. But he's been absolutely atrocious the last 3 or 4 weeks, and very, very difficult guy for me to trust at this point. I mean, I want to play the Texans fantasy defense this week.
Anything else about this game, or should we just move on?
Let's go.
Tennessee, Kansas City. This is a good game. I'm looking forward to that game. Tennessee is in Kansas City. Kansas City just wins. Tennessee's defense was really good against Denver on Sunday, or at least pretty good. Why don't we start with Tennessee in Kansas City offensively? Mariota, DeMarco, the boys, Delaney, whatever.
Yeah. It's going to be tough for Delaney. I would think that Eric Berry is on him this whole game. And we haven't seen a tight end have a good game against the Chiefs all year long. So it's going to be tough for him. And that kind of makes me concerned about Marcus Mariota, although there are some edges that he has. The Chiefs play man coverage, and they've allowed the second most rushing yards in the league to opposing quarterbacks. The Broncos, actually, you know, they're of course a man coverage team too. They have allowed they've allowed the most rushing yards in the league to opposing quarterbacks. And Mariota had 8 scrambles for almost 40 yards against them last week. So that is one potential edge that Marcus Mariota has. I think that his best receiver being in the coverage of, you know, the premier tight end shutdown force is a concern for Marcus Mariota. And the Chiefs have not given up a lot of points at home. I own Marcus Mariota, and I'm looking at benching him. I benched him last week, and I'm looking at benching him. You know, we'll see how the week shakes out, but there are concerns here for sure. DeMarco Murray should be fine. I mean, we just saw Latavius Murray have a big game against the Chiefs at Arrowhead last week, and DeMarco Murray is always going to get 20-plus touches. Derrick Henry actually got a bunch more touches than usual last week, but DeMarco Murray still played 90% of the Titans snaps. So he's just completely locked in. I think it'll be difficult for the receivers too. I mean, Rishard Matthews is going to get a lot of Marcus Peters. I think that's a matchup that Marcus Peters mostly wins, and the rest of the receivers are kind of a crapshoot. Kendall Wright got benched last week for missing meetings, and Tajae Sharpe really hasn't done a whole lot all season long. You know, I think that other than DeMarco Murray, I think that the Titans are in a difficult spot at Arrowhead.
Chiefs offensively against the Titans. Tyreek Hill, Kelsey, Ware, what are we talking here?
Yeah, 8 straight quarterbacks to face the Titans have finished as top 12 fantasy quarterbacks on the week. So, including Trevor Siemian, who last week didn't average a lot of yards per attempt, didn't throw many touchdowns, but he threw for over 350 yards against the Titans. That gives me some optimism about Alex Smith as a streamer this week, and Alex Smith has not paid off for us as a streamer since very early in the year. But I think that he has been, I think that he has played better over the last month. I mean, we saw him hit some downfield shots in that Thursday night game. He's got his full arsenal back with Jeremy Maclin healthy. You know, I mean, they have like explosive potential in the passing game if they get, when they get the ball to their playmakers. Travis Kelce has over 100 receiving yards in four straight games. He can break the record with a fifth straight. He's got over 100 yards in five of his last seven games. So he's just been a complete monster, whether or not Jeremy Maclin has been in the lineup. And then Tyreek Hill, his playing time went down pretty significantly last week with Jeremy Maclin back, but he still got a bunch of targets. I mean, when he's in the game, he's getting targets. They're trying to get him the ball, and he's got incredible big play ability. So I still think he's a boomer bust guy, but you know, he's been booming lately, and this is a great matchup. The Titans have given up more big games to wide receivers than pretty much any team in football this year. Last week, they gave up two big games, both to Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. So I think that the Chiefs' offense can produce here. I was surprised that the total was only 42 points. I mean, I guess weather could play a role, but you know, I think that I think this can be a solid game for the Chiefs, and I think that the Titans have enough edges to think that they can stay competitive and put some points up. Spencer Ware has been. It seems like the Chiefs have just lost confidence in their running game. And, I mean, I think it's for a good reason. Actually, over their last seven games, their running backs are averaging 3.3 yards per carry. And, you know, their running game just is not – it's not happening right now. I don't know if a matchup against the Titans defense at home can kind of, you know, spark them. But a matchup against the Raiders last Thursday night did not spark them. So – you know, I'm downgrading my view of Spencer Ware. I mean, I didn't think he looked great in the Raiders game either, like as an individual player. And he's not really getting any holes. And he got vultured by Charcandrick West for a 5-yard touchdown. So that was a very frustrating game. And, I mean, I think that, you know, as the Chiefs, it seems like they have lost confidence in their running game. I think so, too, should we.
All right, Evan, we got the Colts in Minnesota to take on the Vikings. You already tipped your hand a little bit here with the Vikings being one of the defenses you love this week, which doesn't exactly bode real well for the Colts skill guys.
Yeah, you would think. But I still think that this is like an interesting game because it seems like we're not going to get Dante Moncrief. And, you know, again, I'm doing this on Wednesday before the injury reports come out, and it's possible that when people listen to this, they will already know that Moncrief is playing, or, you know, that Moncrief practice, et cetera. I don't know what the deal is, but right now it seems like Moncrief is not going to play. He aggravated a hamstring injury that had him questionable for that Thanksgiving game against the Steelers last week and did not return. So when Moncrief missed five games earlier this season, T.Y. Hilton averaged almost 11 targets per game, over 100 yards per game. He scored four touchdowns in those five games. Going up against the Vikings is never easy, but T.Y. Hilton, when he's got like a range of like 10 to 15 targets in a game, I mean, this dude is one of the biggest playmakers in the league. And so, He gets used in the slot a lot, so he is going to stay away from Xavier Rhodes, who's played only 2% of his snaps in the slot this year. So, man, I mean, like T.Y. Hilton's price dropped in daily fantasy. I think that after last week, just because of the matchup, I think that if we see that Moncrief is out, T.Y. Hilton becomes very, very intriguing. You know, you get to use him indoors with huge volume potential. And he is probably going to be matching up with, you know, some of the Vikings' weaker cornerbacks. So, and the Vikings are without Harrison Smith as well. So I think that this could be a big game for T.Y. Hilton. The Colts will need to build their offense around him all week. At the same time, I think that it very well could easily be a big game for the Vikings defense, because the Colts are going to be without Jack Muhort. And I mean, it's just a severe mismatch, the Vikings defense against the Colts pass protection problems. I mean, they are, you know, they're leaving like Dwayne Allen, you know, single blocking Jadeveon Clowney, which is just like, you know, like they have issues that go beyond just offensive line play. And Andrew Luck holds onto the ball too long. So the Vikings, this could be a huge spot for their defense.
What about the Vikings offensively? What about Bradford and Rudolph?
Yeah, the Vikings had one of their best games offensively last week in a long time, maybe since that Packers game before their bye. They're taking deep shots now. And they hit Stephon Diggs down the seam for like a 45-yarder. And Adam Thielen beat Prince Amukamara deep for a 41-yard gain early in the game. And, I mean, they had another 40-yard gain, although it was kind of like on a broken play to Kyle Rudolph. But they – I mean, they're taking shots now. And, you know, like having watched their game last week, like, I feel better about their offense. And now they're playing a horrible defense indoors. I think that they can have offensive success. I think that pinpointing who is going to have a big game has become a little bit difficult. I would say that Kyle Rudolph might be the best bet for a big game here. But Stephon Diggs is not, you know, he's not getting those like 13 target games that he was anymore, because Adam Thielen has stepped up and Jerick McKinnon is being used a lot more in the passing game now. So, you know, it's not as easy as it was around midseason to be like, oh, well, you know, this is a good situation for the Vikings offense. So let's go with their best player, Stephon Diggs. You know, it's not like that anymore. The ball is getting spread around a lot more. So, I mean, I think it's kind of up to us to try to figure out which Vikings can have a good game. I mean, I would guess that a couple of guys will. And Kyle Rudolph right now jumps off to me that he could have a big game against the Colts.
Let's get to the last Sunday 1 o'clock Eastern time game. Pretty good matchup. On, you know, at least in terms of the teams, maybe not a great fantasy matchup. It's the Detroit Lions and the New York Giants. I guess one thought or one concern is Matthew Stafford's finger. The other is going up against this Giants defense. What does it mean for you in terms of the Lions on offense, fantasy-wise?
Yeah, so we saw Derek Carr play with his finger injury, and I think he missed like one snap. And they just put him in the shotgun the whole game. He was up in Oakland in a good weather game against Carolina. And then the next week he plays in bad weather. And I mean, he had legitimate accuracy problems, and his balls were either dying on the back end or hitting wires from the sky. I don't know. But I mean, Derek Carr clearly was not sharp trying to play in weather with his finger injury. So Matthew Stafford was mostly fine last week, playing through his finger injury in a dome at home. And now he's going to go to Meadowlands, and, you know, I don't know what to expect. I mean, number one, you got to deal with a great pass defense. Number two, you got to deal with the injury in weather. And number three, you got to deal with the fact that Matthew Stafford with the exception of that game against the Saints, really hasn't been that great of a fantasy quarterback recently. So I think that this is a week to fade Matthew Stafford. I really want no part of him. The pass catchers are tough too. They distribute it between five different guys every single week. Theo Riddick last week didn't really help anyone. It actually helped Darrell Washington the most. But my guess is that Theo Riddick will be back this week. So I don't, you know, it's none of the Lions really stand out this week in fantasy.
What about the Giants and their putrid offense?
Yeah, their offense is just garbage. You know,
their offense is hoping and waiting for Odell Beckham Jr. to make a crazy play. Like, I've never seen an offense before that just counts on a guy to take a slant 70 yards to the house. Like, that's what they're counting on. It's unbelievable.
It's incredible. And the Lions' defense has been good. So I really want no part of this game at all. In fantasy, you know, you have the factor that the Lions play at an incredibly slow pace and just throw short passes all game. They did that again. You know, the Bears ran 50 offensive plays last week. The Lions ran 66 and held the ball for almost seven more minutes than the Bears. So the Lions will probably try to do that against the Giants. So I like Odell Beckham and literally no one else from the Giants.
Let's get to New Orleans and Arizona. Who do you like or not like in that matchup from a fantasy perspective?
Well, this is a big one. I mean, it's got the highest total, or the second highest total on the week. The highest total is the Panthers-Redskins game on Monday night. It's teams that rank, like the Cardinals rank number one in offensive plays run per game. The Saints rank number three. So it's got some up-tempo, you know, possibilities. No weather to worry about. Carson Palmer had been pretty good in fantasy, but we always knew that he had like he had meltdown potential. We saw that at Minnesota in like week 11 or 12, and then it happened again last week at Miami. But now the Cardinals are going back home to face the Saints, you know. So I would think that Carson Palmer would be able to bounce back in the box score. I think that his on-field play remains a concern, and the Saints have had games where their pass rush has really has been strong, and that is really what has given the Cardinals offense the most problems this year. Because they've lost some great offensive linemen, and their offensive line just isn't very good. So that's kind of what you're dealing with Carson Palmer. David Johnson, best running back play in fantasy this week. If Michael Floyd gets benched due to DUI, J.J. Nelson becomes a great, great, great daily fantasy play, and I would guess becomes really popular too, kind of like this week's Taylor Gabriel. If that happens, I also think that Jermaine Gresham becomes really interesting. I think that Jermaine Gresham is actually a guy who's been overlooked. Now 3 weeks in a row, he's got five catches, and he's become a big part of their offense. He's getting 6, 7, 10 targets every single week. And then Larry Fitz has slowed down late in his age 33 season. This kind of happened to him last year as well. I mean, you know, I expected him to have a good game against Atlanta. I expect him to have a good game against Miami. I'm going to expect him to have a good game against New Orleans, but he's also an old guy, late in his career, late down the stretch of the season, who opposing defenses are worried about, because he is one of the Cardinals' few playmakers. So those are all obstacles that Larry Fitzgerald has to deal with.
What about for New Orleans offensively?
Going to be tough. You know, nothing really stands out to me. The Cardinals have not allowed a single passer to go over 275 yards all season. They force takeaways. It's a tough defense to play against. And Drew Brees has now had back-to-back bad games. So it's definitely not a good matchup. I think that, for Drew Brees and the receivers on the Saints, you can just kind of hope that it's a shootout, because it definitely has shootout potential. But the matchup is difficult, and Brees is probably going to they're going to have to come up with a great game plan to out-scheme the Saints or the Cardinals, and I think it's going to be difficult to do. I think that if Michael Thomas comes back, I think that it's more likely that we see Patrick Peterson shadow Brandon Cooks. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get some indications from the team later in the week. It's a tough matchup all around for the Saints offense, I think.
All right. Well, then we can get to another one of the late games. And let's go specifically to San Francisco and Atlanta. Atlanta obviously tore up the Rams. There's a couple defensive touchdowns there, but still, they moved the ball very well. You got the Niners coming in. Carlos Hyde had a big day. You think anybody else has a chance to have a nice day against the Falcons defense?
I don't know if the 49ers are trying to win football games right now. I mean, their play calling suggests to me that they do not want to win games. They dominated that game last week against the Jets. And they still lost. I don't really want any part of any 49ers players this week. I think on the Falcons side, it would make a lot of sense for the Falcons to give Julio Jones another game off. And in that scenario, we're going to get a lot of Aldrick Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, and Justin Hardy again. And I think that Taylor Gabriel remains the best fantasy play of those. Of course, he's been making plays for an extended stretch now. Sanu was ruled out quickly last week. So my guess is that he might not be back either. But I think that the interesting guys, the most interesting guys probably are Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman this week. And Tevin Coleman was a much bigger part of the game plan last week in the absence of Julio. He should be able to rip this one apart. It's just how many touches will he get? And my guess is that he's going to get touches that are toward the high end of his range. I mean, this is just a great situation for the Falcons to really get Tevin Coleman rolling against a really bad run defense that is on the road. So love Tevin Coleman this week, and Devonta Freeman should be real safe too. Same with Matt Ryan. I mean, the Falcons, even without Julio here, they should be able to score a lot of points on a really, really bad defense.
New England is in Denver to take on the Broncos. It's weird. The Broncos aren't really putting up points, but Simeon has been chucking the ball around a little bit. Talk to me first about the Broncos offensively against the Pats D.
Yeah, well, the Broncos can't run the ball at all, man. I mean, their running game, we were talking about it as an issue like a month ago, and it is like way worse now. It's way worse. It's to the point where they're claiming guys off waivers, and they're like Justin Forsett was the lead back last week. And I mean, he lost a fumble. He wasn't terrible. He had a 33-yard run, negated by a penalty. And I mean, he's better than Devontae Booker is at this point. I think that Justin Forsett is going to be their guy, the rest of the way. But sort of like it, and I mean, I'm not comparing Trevor Siemian to Aaron Rodgers, but it's sort of a similar situation. Like there really is no real running game. And so the Broncos get their yards in the air. And so Trevor Siemian has had some monster games recently. I mean, he threw for over 350 yards this past week. He lit up the Chiefs a couple of weeks ago, but before he missed that game with the foot injury. He had a 2-touchdown game against the Saints. I mean, he's played himself into legitimate fantasy consideration. And he's got two weapons that are making plays for him right now, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. Demaryius Thomas has been, I think, a better receiver this year than he was maybe the last 2 years. I mean, he, you know, we're not hearing about these games where he has like a bunch of drops, et cetera. Although he did have two of those last year against New England. And then the Broncos also have started to use A.J. Derby a lot more. He had almost 60 yards last game. This is a revenge game for A.J. Derby against the Patriots, who traded him to the Broncos for a fifth-round pick in October. But, I mean, Trevor Siemian is a guy that we need to be looking at every week because of the nature of the Broncos offense, because he has good weapons. He's pretty athletic. And I mean, this is not a running team anymore, man. This is a team that has to move the ball with Trevor Siemian's arm.
What about the Patriots? Brady, even against number one defense Monday night, still found a way to make a bunch of plays.
I know. Just every time you remotely have any doubt about Tom Brady, you end up looking like an idiot. He's the greatest quarterback of all time against the best pass defense in the NFL. There was a game last year, week 12, I think, where Brady went to Denver and had over 300 yards and, or I think 280 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then he had like 315 yards, 1 touchdown and 2 picks in the playoff game last January in Denver. He had Gronk in both of those games. Doesn't have Gronk now. You know, I think it's going to be difficult for Malcolm Mitchell. Edelman got a billion targets in the playoff game. I think he had 13. He had 7 catches. His matchup is tough against Chris Harris. The Patriots will still throw him, tunnel screens, and they will get the ball in Julian Edelman's hands. I don't think that we have to worry about how many passes he's going to catch, but is he going to score a touchdown? Is he going to make a big play? Probably not. Chris Hogan step forward against the Ravens. It's going to be tough for him to step forward here against the Broncos. I think that one thing we learned about the Patriots on Monday night is that they are not necessarily going to be a team that plays specific to matchups this year. I think that they probably love their running game at this point. And, there are a lot of coaches that believe that you need to have a consistent running game in your offense. It keeps your offense on schedule. It keeps a rhythm to the offense. It reduces the number of like third and long situations if you have, and that's the most difficult down in the NFL, third and long. that if you have a running game, you're not going to be in third and longs very often. So, hey, the Patriots are running the ball on the Ravens, and I would expect them to continue to run the ball against the Broncos. Deion Lewis blew a blitz pickup, or I wouldn't say he blew it. He just got dominated by Eric Weddle, and you know, on a Tom Brady sack last week. That ain't going to help. You know, I think that LeGarrette Blount is the Patriots' feature back, and they will probably go. You know, what is the Broncos' defensive weakness been this year? It's been run defense. So LeGarrette Blount should get his. And then Martellus Bennett looked a little bit healthier last week. Gronk had big games in both of the games against Denver. I mean, I'm not suggesting that Martellus Bennett is as good as Gronk, but it was nice to see him actually involved in the passing offense. He made like a 26-yard gain down the middle, caught that touchdown pass from 19 yards out. So I don't know. I mean, he's still a boom bust guy, Martellus Bennett. But you know, that's good news for the Patriots offense that he's actually been able to make some plays in the passing game now.
Let's go Oakland, San Diego, Evan. Obviously, Oakland's offensive performance, Derek Carr, that was concerning in Kansas City. I guess it's tough to know how much of that you give credit to the Chiefs' D or to the weather or whatever. How are you seeing the Raiders in San Diego, where the weather should be better, I'm guessing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the weather probably had a lot to do with Derek Carr last Thursday night. This game has high-scoring potential. The total is almost 50 points. You know, I think that the Chargers are going to be – it doesn't look like they're going to have Melvin Gordon. And what do they have to play for at this point? I mean, these are probably their last – well, they have two home games left and a road game left, two home games and one road game. These may be the last two games that they ever play. Actually, they're expected to be the last two games that the Chargers ever play in San Diego. I mean, I think that they're going to be going, you know, trying to get Antonio Gates the record, trying to put on a show for the home crowd. And I don't think that means, you know, pounding Kenneth Farrow the entire game. I mean, that's not to suggest that Kenneth Farrow won't get touches. He probably will if he can protect Phillip Rivers. I mean, he had several issues in pass protection last week. So that's a concern for Kenneth Farrow. I mean, I've been holding on to Kenneth Farrow in fantasy league, in deeper fantasy leagues, and I'm going to be starting him this week. But he's definitely not a lock against the Chargers. But I think that they're going to be trying to get Antonio Gates the tight end touchdown record. I mean, Phillip Rivers has been talking about that since June. He's talked about it during the season. Antonio Gates, they've got three games. Antonio Gates needs three touchdowns. My guess is that they would prefer it to happen in a home game in front of the home crowd. And I don't know. I mean, we're diving deep maybe here into the narratives, but I believe that it's a real thing because Phillip Rivers has talked about it multiple times. So I think that they're going to be chucking to Antonio Gates, like, and trying to get him touchdowns. What do you think, Ross?
Yeah, probably. And really, even if they're not, I don't think Rivers gives a you know what. And I think he'll just do it. That's for the beauty of Rivers. Is that even if that's not what Mike McCoy's thinking, I think Rivers will just do what he wants to do. He knows McCoy's gone. He knows nice. He knows the deal. What about did you hit the Raiders hard enough?
No. Latavius Murray is he's become a machine. And he's a guy who I think that in daily fantasy at his price has become difficult to get away from. He's so undervalued or underpriced for a guy who is locked into 20-plus carries every single week. And didn't see a whole lot of passing game usage against Kansas City, but leading into that game was getting a lot more. the Chargers have given up the third most rushing touchdowns, the second most rushing touchdowns in the NFL. And Latavius Murray is scoring at a crazy, crazy clip right now. I think that the matchup that stands out in the Raiders passing game is probably Crabtree. I think that we will see Cooper get chased around by Casey Hayward. Amari Cooper did have a big game against the Chargers in week six, I believe it was. So, I mean, I'm certainly not ruling out Amari Cooper having a big game, but I think the matchup is a little bit better this week for Crabtree. Yeah, I mean, I think that Derek Carr's effectiveness will come down to his finger, but I would feel better about it because they're going to be in much better weather than they were last week. Derek Carr has faced John Pagano's Chargers defense five times in his career, has finished as a top six fantasy quarterback on the week in three of those games. So I like his track record stats here against the Chargers too.
What about Sunday night? It's football night. It's the Bucks. It's the Cowboys. Start with the Cowboys. I think that's maybe the more interesting one.
Yeah, so, I mean, Dak has had a couple games where he's turned the ball over, and that's going to be an issue if it continues. It has also occurred in road games at Minnesota and at the Giants, two of the best defenses in the league. So, you know, and the Bucs don't have a pushover defense either. But I think that it's more likely that Dak Prescott comes back home and, you know, has a bounce back game than he stays in the tank. At the same time, like, this is an Ezekiel Elliott game, I think. I think Zeke could really, really rip this one up. The Buccaneers have been good, like, in terms of their defensive front and being able to create pressure. And I mean, they're, you know, in terms of their points allowed, but they have still given up a lot of chunk yardage on the ground. And with Dak struggling, I mean, the Cowboys have tried to become more of an explosive downfield passing team. And so when they face the Giants and the Vikings on the road, and they're not able to execute, and a couple of those shots, you know, turned into interceptions, and Dez ran some crappy routes last week too, and got straight dominated on some plays by Janoris Jenkins. But you know, those are really tough, difficult defenses to play against. So, I mean, I think that Dak bounces back, but I think that this is mainly a Zeke Elliott game. And at the same time, like, the Cowboys need to get Dez Bryant rolling. You know, he's going to get his targets, and he has monster big play ability. And, you know, the week before, he was, you know, going for over 80 yards and a touchdown against the Vikings. So I think that he bounces back too.
All right, what about the Bucs on the other side? They've been playing pretty good defense, not really lighting it up offensively.
Right.
Cam Brate, Mike Evans, Doug Martin, what do you got for me?
Yeah, they have been very, very, very run heavy, and this is something that they have done at a few different points this year. I mean, I think that they're going to have to score points to beat the Cowboys. I don't think that they're just going to be able to sit on the ball like they did all last week against the Saints. I think they're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive. I don't think that they're going to go to, you know, Jerry Land and Doug Martin's going to run all over the Cowboys. You know, their running game hasn't been like that. Their running game has been like, you get 3 yards, 5 yards, you know, they're not hitting big plays in the running game right now. Mike Evans has disappointed in two straight weeks, and now we get to use him in a dome in a game that, you know, I think that the Bucks are going to have to be aggressive offensively. So, you know, last week the Cowboys used Brandon Carr to try to shadow Odell Beckham. You know, that didn't really work out. They may try to do something similar to Mike Evans this week. You know, I think that would be a good matchup for Mike Evans if they're able to if they put him singled up with Brandon Carr. Mike Evans played the Cowboys once before in his career at 8 for 126. The Cowboys have given up a ton of stats to tight ends. That bodes well for Cameron Brate, who has led the Bucs in receiving in back-to-back games.
Monday night, Evan, it is Carolina against the Redskins. I'll be there on the sideline for that one. Let's start with the Redskins. Kirk Cousins, DeSean Jackson caught a bomb. He usually does. It's kind of unbelievable, actually. Jordan Reed did not do a whole lot in that game. Talk to me about the Redskins against the Carolina Panthers Monday night.
Yeah, Jordan Reed only played 10 snaps in the last game. So they were easing him in, you know, and that happens. Now he's got an extra day. I think he'll be full. I would be surprised if he was not full go against the Panthers on Monday night. So, you know, we'll monitor reports, et cetera, but that would be surprising. Jordan Reed should be full blast against Carolina. Yeah, I mean, DeSean is a guy that I do not want to bet against when he's hot down the stretch of his contract year. You know, he's ripping a big play pretty much every week at this point. And the Redskins are they can beat you at all three levels of the passing game. They're very, very impressive. They didn't have the ball a lot last week against the Eagles. Their passing game is really, really strong. And Kirk Cousins, every week, he's getting it done. Last week, he had 230 yards and 2 touchdowns, and that was like a down week for him. But he's good in fantasy every week, and I would expect him to have a good game. This game has the highest total of the week, 51 points. We can count, I think, every week on Rob Kelly for 15 or more carries, and whether or not he scores a touchdown dictates whether or not he pays off as a fantasy start. Jamison Crowder's usage and production are kind of down lately, although held under 50 yards in consecutive games. Although, I mean, there's nothing really scary about this matchup. I mean, we saw Dontrell Inman have a big game. He mostly runs in the slot, which is where Jamison Crowder also plays. Saw Inman have a big game against Carolina last week. You know, they struggled to deal with Doug Baldwin the game before that. So nothing imposing about the matchup for Jamison Crowder. It's just a matter of how many balls is he going to get on a weekly basis. Yeah, I mean, I think that about sums it up for the Redskins offense.
All right. How about Carolina? Bring us home.
Cam Newton has been a top 16 fantasy quarterback in just 2 of 7 games since the Panthers' Week 7 bye. So he has become very, very frustrating, not only in real life but also in fantasy. You know, the receivers are not getting open. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin is never open. I wish that they would use more of Devin Funchess. He's made plays for them. I don't know why they don't use more of him. Olsen finally got going a little bit, but his passing game usage has been down because he's had to block more due to the Panthers' pass protection issues. You know, I like the high scoring potential of this game. I think that the matchups are beneficial, particularly for Olsen against the Redskins. I think that Ginn is not in a bad spot either. You know, I think that if the Panthers show up and you know, play to their potential, they can have a great, great game, and Cam can have a great game. But we have not seen that happen very often. So to me right now, Cam is just he's a boomer bust guy who has been busting a lot more lately than he has been booming. Benjamin, I don't even know if he's usable in any fantasy leagues right now. He got dominated by the Seahawks corners a couple weeks ago, then by the Chargers corners last week, and you know now he's probably going to have to deal with a lot of Richard Sherman. So, and then Jonathan Stewart, you know, same deal as always with him, because he doesn't get any usage in the passing game. He has got to score touchdowns to help you. When he doesn't score touchdowns, he leaves you with like 62 yards, you know, 6 points, and that's never great. So, you know, just say, never changes with Jonathan Stewart.
All right. Well, so I had the defenses I had written down for you, Evan, was Minnesota, Houston, Seattle. I know a lot of those might be owned already, but those are the defenses I wrote down for you. Any quarterback plays you really like this week?
I think that Alex Smith could be an okay sleeper this week if that weather isn't too bad. Although we did see him throw the ball pretty well in, you know, frigid temperatures last Thursday night. So, I like Alex Smith. I think that Sam Bradford, he's played better recently, I think, and he's facing the Colts, kind of like him. But, I think that those are the guys to me that right now stand out. Oh, and Phillip Rivers, I think. People may have dropped him recently. He's thrown a ton of picks. But I would expect him to be very, very aggressive in this game against the Raiders.
Evan, fantastic stuff as always, man. Really, really well done. Appreciate it. And I'll be coming to your city on Saturday, coming to Chicago. So it'll be good to get out there, although it is freezing in Chicago. So when it's this cold, you don't want to go out and have to go shopping. My recommendation, take advantage of the Amazon banner ad we have for you guys at rostucker.com. There's really no reason to even go shopping anymore. You can buy everything you need from Amazon just using our banner ad, which takes you to a landing page. Bookmark that bad boy. We also have all kinds of other gift ideas on the sponsors page at rostucker.com, but I want to make sure you guys knew about the Amazon banner ad. Speaking of gift ideas, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the Fantasy Feast, but my buddy, if you've got kids, my buddy's got the ball cannon. He just invented it. It's awesome. He's actually a guy from my hometown that I've become closer with recently. Anyway, just check out the video of the ball cannon and thank me later if you have kids. Can't imagine there's a better gift for them than that. Other than that, I think we're just about done here. It's been brought to you by FanVice.com, the home of all your daily fantasy sports needs. Keep an eye out for my Tucker in the Trenches segment that they usually post Friday or Saturday on FanVice.com every week this NFL season. Make sure you follow them on Twitter, at FanVice DFS. I'm stuffed. I'm full. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
You know, there's something about TrueCar. I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while, but there's something a lot of people don't know, and is that using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So you knew about buying new cars. You can also get better deals on pre-owned cars through the TrueCar certified dealer network. The key is you'll see what other people paid for the car in your area. So if you want to know what a fair price is and feel confident when you make your purchase, that is the key to me. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. That is the way that you can go. Again, TrueCar. Some of these features, by the way, not available in all states, but it's pretty cool. I've used TrueCar to know what you're doing, to know what price you should be paying. It's really, really nice. A quick, easy buying experience. Again, check out TrueCar before you buy your new or pre-owned car.